If there's content that's borderline, that's content that we basically will not.
There is no second best. There is no second best crypto asset.
I respect you, and I have a great deal of appreciation to you, Jaya.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. Merry Christmas, everyone. BeatSoup, Catty Cat, John Drake, Merry Christmas, Andra Day. Pete Pete has sent a super chat just before the show. Thank you so much. He says, hee-haw.
Hee-haw and Merry Christmas. Sam Wainwright.
All right, well, thank you. And friend of Gandalf, thank you for your great super chat earlier. Massive super chat. Thank you so much. Thank you very much. You guys are allowing me to live a life of dream and a life of exploration. Today and in the last few days, I've been doing a lot of culinary experiments. I need to gather pictures and develop various culinary innovations for white people food. This is what I've been doing. Yesterday or 2 days ago, I've been developing a Xiaolong Bao with flavors from European cuisine. I've developed five different flavors. Here you have the croque monsieur. So if you don't know Xiaolong Bao, if you're not like me and you didn't have a Chinese girlfriend, I've been enjoying with my Chinese girlfriend eating these buns. They call them buns. It is so chewy on the outside, and they dip the Xiaolong Bao in vinegar, just pure vinegar. Unlike in European cuisine, where vinegar is processed and evaporated, the Chinese black vinegar often, or some other form of vinegars, are just straight out put in a pot. They add some ginger to it, but that's it. And you have this super vinegary surface that develops as you dip with your baguettes. You dip the Xiaolong Bao in a vinegar, and it is absolutely delicious. It's just a regular meat filling for the dumpling usually, but I thought, how about we inject some flavor in the bao? So I developed five different European takes on the Xiaolong Bao. Here we have turkey, Thanksgiving turkey dinner. Literally, I've put in this bao a jelly of cranberry, a crouton from a turkey filling, and then ground turkey and the spices that you would normally get in a turkey dinner, Thanksgiving turkey dinner. Bro, you eat this, you have like the whole plate of a Thanksgiving dinner that is just popping in your mouth. The turkey, the cranberry. I would say this is such a violent culinary innovation. It's actually, the world may not be ready for this one, because you have to know what's a turkey dinner to kind of enjoy this taste. But it is so loyal to the actual Thanksgiving turkey dinner. It's amazing. But it's like too much taste in your mouth at the same time. So I would say only for the adventurous, I would go for the Thanksgiving turkey bao. Then I developed a Welsh rarebit bao with a thick slice of maple glazed bacon, aged cheddar, and a mustard sauce, mustard Worcestershire sauce. All of this popping in your mouth absolutely beautifully. The Welsh rarebit bao is perfect. I don't even need to fix the recipe. Just melty mustard taste with melty aged cheddar. Absolutely pub fare classic transformed into an Asian form. Here I developed the croque monsieur bao. So that is a bechamel white sauce. It's a French classic, normally served in a bread, between bread slices. So you have melted cheese, melted mozzarella, you have ham. And all of it does a very melty, cheesy thing around the ham. It's absolutely delicious. The Croque Monsieur and the Welsh Rarebit are the two best attempts here. I think they are pub ready. Then I have the hot chicken sandwich with peas and brown sauce and chicken pieces. This was good, but it was not flavorful enough to be compared to the Welsh Rarebit. So it was kind of a little bit of a neutral taste. It wasn't so far from a Chinese bao, but with the peas added. And then number five, the galette bretonne, which is one of my favorite breakfasts. It is a sausage that is classically a galette bretonne. A galette saucisse bretonne is a buckwheat pancake wrapping a sausage with cheese in it. So you have melting cheese over a pork sausage trapped in a buckwheat pancake. I've injected those flavor in the bao by putting some sausage meat, some cheese jelly, and cheese melt. It's good, but it is hard to know that it's a saucisse because I haven't found a way yet to inject the buckwheat flavor. So it's hard to tell that it's a galette saucisse. But excellent bao. And then I had my sauces, apple cider, Worcestershire, Dijon mustard emulsion in white rice, in white wine vinegar, smoked paprika and malt vinegar. And then I had a reduction of apple cider vinegar with cloves. That was so perfumed. You mix the Thanksgiving turkey dinner bao with the apple cider reduction, and it's like, it's an explosion of taste. It's maybe one of the things that I've tasted that has the most taste to it. Like, you get the cloves, you get the... And you're like, how is this in a bao? This tastes like my grandma's dinner or something. Absolutely spectacular results that I've obtained. And then today, I have spent the day being extremely serious on developing a method for the best fries. I know some people are interested in the golden fries, but I was interested at the brown fries. So I was like, how do we get to those classical Quebec brown fries that make it into a poutine? I've done all sorts of processes. I had a batch of potatoes that went in the refrigerator for 2 days. Batch of potato at room temperature, some of them soaked in baking soda, some of them soaked in regular water, some of them kept at the air, some of them blanched in water, some of them blanched in oil, and then after the blanching, all of them fried with the same timing, the same temperature. And it's absolutely amazing. I have the result. I will keep the result secret. So that you have to buy white people food. But look at this. I have classified what leads to the perfect brown fries, which in my view is this one. I think that is the perfect brown fries. I've tried three different types of potatoes in all of these. Now, the blanching in water, it's those fries. Definitely, it's inferior. The result is inferior. If you blanch in water, it leads to a membrane on the outside that is not oily. And let me tell you, blanching in oil is the way. 300 degrees Fahrenheit for 1 minute, 10 seconds. That was my blanching. And it led to the best results across all categories and all potato types. So now that I had obtained my perfect brown fries, I was able to select them out and build the absolute perfect poutine. That right there, that is a poutine. That is the only poutine. You can do whatever you want. This is an actual poutine. Most of people will never, if you live outside of Quebec, you will never taste a real poutine. What is a real poutine? First, you have brown fries. A real poutine has brown fries. Second, it has cheese curds. No replacement for cheese curds. You can't just put cubes of mozzarella in there. And then the sauce. The sauce must be super beefy. It's like super thick, ultra beef concentrate, absolutely reduced, thickened with cornstarch, and very thick, very brown, dark brown. That is a poutine, and I will be able to teach you in the book how you get to this perfect result. It is, you know, when you do a culinary exploration, it's all fun and games. But if you want to do a serious poutine, there's no way you can diverge from this. It is exactly what you have to achieve. It's about the quality of the sauce. It's about the beefy taste. It's about the thickness. And it's about the browning of the fries and then the cheese curds. That is all you have to care about. You have to focus. Don't come to me with, I'm going to add this or that. This is the poutine. I've eaten a couple, because I'm on a diet, I've eaten a couple of forks of it, and then I threw it in the trash. That is so sad. That is so sad because there are so many people around the world who will never have such a good poutine in front of them. It went to the trash. Can you believe this? I have to do what I have to do. It went to the trash. Fade VM says, I'm 10 minutes in the past, working my way forward to the present. See y'all soon. I'm at 1.75x. Okay, bro. Okay. Now, this has been memeing a lot, this video about genetics. I mean, if you want to get blackpilled about, will people ever just accept the truth? I mean, we are in such a luxurious world. We have all the science done for us. We have genetics. But the obfuscation mentally of the people, it's showing up in this journalist in an absolutely hilarious way. Now, this guy, I don't like his reaction. He's too effeminate. I've always found him too effeminate, too beta, too emotional about it. And you'll see, he's not deploying the best argument. Because when you're faced with someone denying genetics, you have to take a break first, and they will ridicule themselves. So most of your job is to shut up and bring the scientific knowledge. If you yell, if you get nervous, or if you say, don't you realize there's genes that encode skin color, then you've lost already, because you've stolen the spectacle. The spectacle is that this person is completely uninformed about science, and yet making broad statements about it. Let the spectacle happen and correct it with the proper science. Don't get overexcited. And now in your overexcitation, you'll see what he does. He ends up saying, well, there is scientific proof that black people have genes that make their skin black. No, you've just conceded a goalpost. This shouldn't be your point, because the leftists have no problem saying, oh yeah, maybe there are genes for skin color. They will say this. You have to be encompassing in your rejection. You don't, because if you reduce and you're down to, well, at least there are genes for skin color, then the leftists got you. They got the discussion where they wanted. You have to say, no, absolutely certain that genes exist. And you have to get out of the black and white situation and say, genes exist, squirrel genes exist. Squirrels are squirrels because they have genes, and they don't have human genes. If they had human genes, they would not be squirrels. He totally fails at doing this. And so you'll see how a highly effeminate, low testosterone, glass-wearing man can absolutely fail despite... I'm sure that this guy understands genetics. I'm sure he's a clever guy. I've watched some of his videos, but he doesn't understand debate. He doesn't understand the viciousness of leftist debate. Sadie Edwards says, best JF reply, I reject everything you just said. Savage. Yeah, exactly. That's how it's done.
Malcolm, you've said things like, black women are biologically different than white women.
Yes, they have different fertility windows. They have a higher rate of fertility complications. 50%.
See, he's going for the small stuff. Oh yeah, they have a different fertility window. A typical thing that people say in this situation is, oh yeah, doctors will tell you they have more risk of high blood pressure. And it's like, no, you've lost already if you're saying these things. Because leftists have no problem saying, well, of course they have blood pressure problem. That's because they live in poverty. They're more nervous. They're more obese. They're not given the right food by the capitalist system. You have narrowed the extent of your statement already. And he's just a few words in. He's just a few words in and he's already losing.
There's no scientific evidence to prove that a black woman and a white woman are genetically different, right? This
absolutely incorrect. You are incorrect. A black woman is genetically different than a white woman. Anyone is genetically different from anyone else. The blacks are even more genetically different than the white as they are between each other. That is absolutely false.
Like, what are you talking about?
Now look, he drops the emotional. What are you talking about? Well, no. Correct the falsehoods, but don't make your emotional state the new spectacle. We already have a spectacle. We have a journalist that just said something absolutely stupid. Don't steal it. Let it happen. Be calm, collected, and let the show happen. It's already ridiculous. You're not going to make it more ridiculous by making these facial expressions. This is where the artist wins. The artist knows how to shut up and enjoy what's already stupid.
Yeah. No.
Literally, there are genes that code for their skin color.
And there you go. You've just granted a goalpost move, and you've narrowed the extent of your position. Because now you're arguing about skin color. And you see, with a move of the hand, she was ready to grant this. She was like, oh, well, okay, skin color, okay. But not genetically different, right? Well, yes, what applies to the skin color applies to the whole of the genome.
And this is like government data. This is EMI, right? This is the National Institute of Health.
No. It is not the position of the National Institute of Health that there is no genetic difference between people. This is absolute. It's not even a misinterpretation of an existing belief. This is taken from absolutely nowhere. There is not a current living scientist that denies genes and that denies genetic difference between people and genetic difference between races. How do you think 23andMe works? How do you think it works?
This is the American Medical Association. Like they're
absolutely not. This is not, I have never seen a statement by a medical association that people do not differ genetically. Never happened.
There is no scientific evidence to prove that.
And that's a big problem, right? Because
there's no scientific evidence, like IQ differences.
Now, see, he's making the error. Now he's trying to rebroaden his statement, going to IQ. And he's even granting some of it. Like, he's not going aggressively into his rebroadening. He's like, oh, no, yeah, we could discuss whether IQ differs because of genes. It's like, no, well, you're granting. all you do is granting. All you do is abandoning stuff that is just basic science. It's like every word you said in this fucking interview was you abandoning, narrowing your position. Even as you try to rebroaden it, you're giving up. You're giving up land. You're abandoning your positions. Now you're stuck in a funnel with her who doesn't know what the fuck she's talking about. And you're stuck. She's funneling you down. Now you're down to, okay, let's leave IQ on the side. I'm not sure about it. Let's talk about skin color. Oh, well, skin color. Well, the medical association said that race, that genes don't differ between people, and you haven't even countered this. So now you've given up IQ differences, cognitive behavior. You're down to skin color, and you're not even handling it well. How's your narrowing going, Mr. Glasses? Maybe you should have smaller glasses. I'm sure they make smaller glasses that are just as efficient. There's a waste of plastic here.
Black people are genetically different from other populations.
And I'll say that again. There is no scientific evidence to prove that.
That is incorrect. The science that 23andMe is based on is absolutely mainstream accepted science to the point where there's not even a denier of it. You won't find a single denier of genetic differences. Where the fuck does she come from? Where does she get her info? I don't know. Maybe she doesn't get her info. Maybe she's just really just a ideological leftist that just doesn't read. But I've never heard, even from the Krautenty days, the far right, the far left extremist, I've never heard a denial that genes differ. Why would we even talk about genes if they didn't differ? Well, what makes an octopus?
Right, and as people
I'm stating, do you want to ask an AI if there's scientific evidence to prove that?
No, I want to ask...
You stupid fuck. Now you've just brushed your emotionality all over this debate. You fail at countering actually demonstrable falsehood that she stated, and now you want to refer to AI. And you're not even giving her a reason to change her belief. You're not correcting her wrongs. You're not correcting her false statements about the medical association, the NIH, genes, differences. You're not even beginning to do something. You're already showing your weakness by saying, let us trust AI. Now, I love AI. I love Grok, and Grok is pretty reliable. But it's not an argument in a debate. You're getting caught again by small talk, emotional talk, and irrational references to authorities. By the way, at some point, reference to AI will be a authority fallacy. AI is not yet considered a super expert by people who don't know much about it. I've been speaking with Grok a lot. I know that Grok is an expert. Grok is PhD level in everything. But it's still not an argument, because even if it's PhD level in everything, you couldn't cite a PhD and make this a reason to believe a fact. You have to go empirically. You have to bring her on the grounds of, listen, do you acknowledge that DNA exists? So you have to bring her onto the basis. Does this woman even know that DNA exists? I mean, then do squirrels have DNA? Do humans have DNA? Okay, so now there are differences of DNA, and those are differences of gene. You bring her progressively, and you see where it breaks. This is what you have to do in a debate. You have to see where is the broken part of this machine here.
No, because what you're stating is just factually incorrect.
Don't say that it's factually incorrect. Prove it. never say it's factually incorrect unless you've attempted to prove it and the person is just blinding herself. But you have to prove it and you have to put it on the record before you go and kind of meta claim that your theory is false. It's factually incorrect. Well, if it's factually incorrect, you should be able to state, absolutely not. There has never been an NIH statement that there is no difference of genes between people. That would be completely contrary to everything the NIH does. You know, a large percentage of our research is actually about how people differ genetically and how we can improve healthcare from this.
Humans are genetically diverse. It's not a bad thing that humans
are genetically diverse. I'm not saying
it's ever. No. See, he, as an emotional guy, beta male, he drifts toward the moral component of it. But you haven't even begun to make a case. You haven't even begun to make a case about the factual wrongness. You have not stated that the NIH didn't state this. You have not stated that the medical association didn't do this. All you've done is try to shovel back emotions onto her. And now you're even at a higher level of emotion. You are in the moral domain. Oh, but what I'm saying is not bad. It's like you are paintbrushing the world of facts with moral considerations, as if you cared more about how people will look at you. This is why this cuck right here, this guy, has never said anything intelligent in his entire life. They make these shows. I've been watching some of these shows where they flirt with the idea of eugenics because they're this kind of, we're so edgy. We want to maximize the well-being of our babies. And then they kind of do this bait and switch. This is what their show is about. It's this old bait and switch of, oh yeah, we care about optimizing our baby, but we wouldn't want to be racist, right? Because that would be crazy, right? Because, and it's like, only a cuck could play this game for so many years as this fucking clown did. Only a deep fucking retarded cuck. And here you can see why. This couple right here, there's an alpha and it's not him. There's one alpha in this couple and it's not him. This guy is a little attack dog, hyper emotional, behaviorally troublesome beta under the leech of this woman right there who hasn't said a word yet. That's how it works. And the emotionality you see there, that will make a woman lose respect for you forever.
I'm not saying it's a bad or a good thing. I'm saying there is no scientific evidence.
And I'm saying that is a factual.
And he's saying that there is scientific
evidence. There is scientific evidence.
See the alpha? See, this girl, actually, this girl isn't so bad. Their show is bad, but ultimately it's because of him. She's trying to reestablish a line of communication that is on more rational basis. So she's trying to say to the interviewer, no, he's saying that what you stated is wrong. That's what he's. But how is it that in a minute of talk from this cuck right there, what is it? How is it that I need a woman to summarize it so that it's clearer? That it was so emotional that I needed a rational woman to show up to explain both to the audience and to the interviewer what's happening here. No, he's trying to say you're wrong. Well, thank you, lady. Thank you. That was the first non-emotional statement in this whole interview. Now, the interviewer doesn't give a shit about whether that's happening. The interviewer has caught your mail, your little leech dog. The interviewer has caught him and she's playing with him right now. And you're there trying to bring back the discussion toward the facts. That's not what she cares about. She cares about the fact that she caught your angry white male into a bad moment. and she's going to keep tickling his feet.
There's overwhelming scientific evidence. This is like saying the sky's not blue.
He looks like, you're a white male guy. Yes, he does, Luther Blissett, he does.
Like, it is genes that code their skin color, right? Those genes are obviously different in them than they are in us. How is that not science? That's just like a basic fact. The genes that code their skin color, their level of melanin production, are different from my genes that code melanin production.
And that's precisely why I was asking this question, because I think for some people that do believe like you.
Unbelievable. No, there are genes. Well, for the people who believe this kind of stuff, is the entirety of the science world. Now, the way this guy approaches this interview was absolutely bad. Here's my response if she comes at me with something like this. I say, that statement you just made is absolutely incorrect. We have decades of evidence indicating that life forms do differ in genes, and that is true also of subspecies and subparts of a species and subpopulations, such that absolutely we can say that there are tens of thousands of letters of DNA by which a black person will differ from a white person. That has been established. It is absolutely mainstream belief. Your statements about the NIH and the Medical Association are false. You have misinterpreted something they said because they have never said such things. And if you claim that they did, I would like to see the link to any such statement that they made, because it is absolutely accepted in medical sciences and biological sciences that groups differ by genes, by the frequency of their genes, by which genes they have. And these differences are what companies like 23andMe are based on. Period. No emotionality. You don't want to give them the emotionality, because the emotionality stems from this woman's attempt at denying the truth. Now, if I overflood the interview with my own fabulous, no, it's absolutely factually incorrect, I can guarantee you. What did I just do? I flooded her stupidity with my emotionality. And now the big flashing red light of this interview is not how crazy this woman is, which it should be, but it is how emotional this man is.
That people are genetically different, that has historically been used to promote racial hierarchy.
Now she's making the move toward the moral, but she captured him because he hasn't been able to formulate a response to the factual matter. So now she's moving and acquiring more ground and saying, this historically has been used. Argument ad consequentum, we don't care. It can be used, but it doesn't change the matter of fact. And it can be used in a way that you don't like, and it doesn't change the matter of fact.
Right, and that's why I'm asking you.
So, overall, I'm happy that this meme, but it's not the best defense of genetics distinction that we can have. That is sad. That is sad because we have better. We have so much better than these guys, these fucking clowns, these eugenic weirdos. That's what they are. These weirdos. These people. RCMP lays PEI's first hate crime charge over alleged anti-Semitic post. It's getting hot in Canada. There are now two hate crime cases opened. One, I believe, in Saskatchewan, one in PEI. Basically, people generally making statements about Hitler, stuff like this. I don't even know if the new law is in effect, but I think they're trying to already start enforcing it on the basis of the old law, and the new law will come and will make it potentially graver. And will make this kind of prosecution perhaps more common. So we have to be very careful with free speech in Canada. We have to be careful. All right. Time for the review of the year. Kovi Clown says, would love to see you do a whole PowerPoint answer to these cucks. Well, yeah, you know, it's kind of the story of my life. I've done so many debates about this. I've made my case, you know, years of public statements defending just a basic biological view of humanity. So 2025 was a high event year. I hadn't realized, I just asked Grok, can you list to me the important events of 2025 so that I can remind myself what this year was? And it shocked me. In January 2025, Trump entered office. I felt like this was 3 years ago, 2 years ago. No. 1 year ago, less than a year ago, actually, Trump entered office as the 47th president of the United States. That is a quick realization that hit me. That there has been changes. The federal government is changing, and Trump is definitely pushing in the right direction on many themes. We have to give him credit. I like to complain about him, but he took a machine that was absolutely turned against its own people, that was filled with anti-white hatred, that was turned against parents, you know, as terrorists, treating them as terrorists because they wanted to know what's happening with their boards of education. And it was a machine of government that was extremely lenient on illegal immigration. And Trump veered it in the right direction. That is a very good thing that happened in 2025. Although we can have our critiques, and I still have my questions about the demographic future of the U.S. I don't think the situation is bright at all. And I don't think that Trump is doing enough to fix it. But in terms of direction, in terms of alignment, we were going straight to hell. Now we might be good. We might be taking a curved road to hell. And that is better. That is better than what we had under the technocracy of the Joe Biden staffers who were basically commanding this country in his cognitive absence. John Drake says his base is broken. The Republicans will lose the House in the midterms. Oh, yeah, we'll talk about this. I mean, this whole year, the theme of this year is the schism that just cracked into the Republican Party. As we should be celebrating victories, we should be able to get together and be fixated on our goals, of what are the goals of the right. But unfortunately, there is a creeping force within the right that is keeping this from happening. And the tug of war between this constituency of the right and I would say the true right is, and where Trump lies even in this split is not even clear. He's kind of right on the schism, trying to drain forces from outside. The MAGA movement is kind of true right at times if you speak to them individually. But if you look at their organizations and their expressions and institutions, it's all extremely centrist. It's all extremely statist. And Trump is extremely statist. So there is all the schism on the axis of Israel support, on the axis of statism, on the axis of is the right just social conservative authoritarians? Is that what the right is? Because I may not even belong in the right if that's the case. You know, the Trump tough guy kind of display that we have as a presidency, this whole, look, we're going to film our crackdowns on illegal migrants. We're going to film our crackdown on this Home Depot manufacturer or whatever. And we're going to go in and cameras in and we're going to make a show from it. This whole overt display that Nick Fuentes had some words for this. He said this performative cruelty. Is like, it, to me, it's just another form of authoritarianism. And although authoritarianism can give a feeling of satisfaction, perhaps for the people who have been oppressed for so long by the left, by the attacks, by the Antifa, by the injustices, by the hit pieces. And it's very easy to fall for being emotionally relieved from seeing your enemies suffer. But it is also not super productive because it's a spectacle mostly. January, Israel and Hamas reach a ceasefire agreement on January 15, ending the 15-month Gaza war with U.S. mediation playing a key role. So you had this seeming calming of the tension between Israel and Gaza in terms of visible output. But I think that when this peace deal or the ceasefire agreement, whenever you, however you want to treat it, I think that when these steps came, the war was already over. Israel had essentially carpet bombed Gaza. And so it took a lot of time. It took a lot of time for these official voices to jump in and say, whoa, whoa, whoa. That kind of looks like a genocide when we were saying this at the beginning, because we know we had all of the facts. It was all available to social media, and yet it took a year or two before the official voices and European countries and Canada got into the game of saying, oh, well, yeah, I mean, you have violated humanitarian rights. And then there was this peace or ceasefire, which wasn't very meaningful because the damage was already done. Netanyahu had done what he wanted. So how do we speed up the process of identifying ongoing violations of human rights? That is a question that we should ask in 2025. In February, U.S. President Trump meet, and I'm reading, I asked Grok to list a couple of events that I find important and to list the themes, which is everything that's related to Trump and geopolitics and Charlie Kirk. U.S. President Trump in February meets Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky at the White House, where Trump and Vice President J.D. Vance criticize Zelensky, raising concerns about continued U.S. support for Ukraine. That was a funny moment. Funny moment, although in the end, it was still spectacle. Because what do we have now? We're still in the conflict between Russia and Ukraine. Trump didn't solve it. And we had a moment, though, where it felt like Trump was wanting to decredibilize Zelensky. And they made a mockery out of him in the White House. He came in and Trump made a show about ridiculing Zelensky. There was even a journalist, a Trump sympathetic journalist, who laughed at Zelensky for not wearing a suit and saying, whoa, why are you in this this war setting all the time? That would be absolutely beautiful if Trump had continued using that leverage to deny Ukraine the continuation of this war. But instead, Trump reverted. A month or two later after this, he was, oh, well, Russia has to calm down now. But it's like you haven't even convinced your own side of wanting peace. So, and you have Zelensky continuing his irrational demands by his European backers, who want to reconquer Crimea. They want to be given back Crimea, basically. If you ask them what they demand, they want Putin to say, all right, guys, I won the war, but I'm going to give a piece of Russia to you. Forget about this. This is nonsense. And Trump, by oscillating between the two sides, he is feeding, yes, Marby Dog, the war machine. The war machine will be fed. And Trump has shown us there that he wasn't determined enough to take a side, take the right side, to end the war. Like, you have to, even if you look at, forget about the morals and all, just pragmatically, if you really want to end the war, you have to give nothing to Zelensky. And Trump, after mocking Zelensky, instead of stopping US aid, it kept going. And now there's weaponry and ammunitions being sent to Zelensky again. China imposes export controls and tariffs on American imports. So there was this economic war started by the Trump tariffs. I don't think that the Trump tariffs have fundamentally changed the economy, but it's something that happened in 2025. Trump made this attempt. Down the line, Trump is overselling this thing by saying, oh yeah, one day we're not going to pay taxes. I've never heard of politicians lowering taxes or abolishing taxes, therefore removing all of their power over you. That is extremely unlikely. March, the Trump administration pauses military aid to Ukraine on March 3 following tensions with Zelensky. Those were good signs of the early Trump administration. Did he follow up on this? No. We're not even a year later, and he's already stepped back on this and became critical of Vladimir Putin. When we all know what's causing the standstill is the fact that Zelensky doesn't want peace. Which leads me to believe he wants all those Ukrainian males dead. April, U.S. President Trump imposes sweeping trade tariffs on many countries. So Trump oscillated. The messaging was very unclear on those. But eventually it converged toward these tariffs being maintained. Then he announces a natural resource deal on April 30 with Ukraine. And the idea was that somehow there would be a flashlight having mine working Americans, and that their presence to steal the resources of Ukraine. that was basically what Trump was selling it as. That their presence in stealing the resources of Ukraine would temper down the Russian army. The Russians would be scared. I don't want to shoot an American. And so it would calm down the tensions. Did that happen? I'm not seeing it. I'm not seeing how this resource deal is tied to peace at all. There is no effective peace that was obtained by any of this. So again, overselling. The great defect of Trump. Overselling. In May, Robert Prevost is elected as Pope Leo, becoming the first American pope. I don't have much to say about this. I think that the Catholic Church is an institution that doesn't matter to me, but I guess it matters to the world. June, Israel conducts airstrikes on Iran's nuclear facilities on June 13, killing key military commanders. But let's never forget that before before Trump airstruck Iran, Israel tried to pull him into it by doing all these strikes that were targeting, sometimes inside Iran, military commanders. So it's one way in which Israel provokes America and tries to pull us in. And he pulls Donald Trump in successfully on June 22 using B-2 bombers. Trump strikes the three Iranian nuclear sites. Completely useless strike that has just created animosity, and justifiably, we are intervening in the sovereign development of another nation for the purpose of satisfying Israel and its paranoid interpretation of geopolitics. That is sad. That is just sad, but it's a product of the subversion of the American government and American politics. GM for the People says the raw earths is just a smokescreen. The BBD duck and pork noodle and soup and Lac Saint-Jean Long Xiong Zhao Bao is the real culinary battleground. Hashtag white people food. The Lac Saint-Jean Long Xiong Zhao Bao. July, the U.S. assesses that its strikes degraded Iran's nuclear program by 1 to 2 years. Again, so that's the best estimate we got from the people who have all of the incentives to overstate. So it's like, if the U.S. tells me they degraded Iran's nuclear program by 1 to 2 years, that's the maximum. That's the ceiling. That's the hardest case you can make. But even if that was true, 1 to 2 years, are you fucking kidding me? You've slowed down a process by 1 to 2 years. And it's supposed to be a process that is of an existential risk to Israel and to all of us. You've slowed the death of humanity by 1 to 2 years. Wow, bravo. U.S. President Donald Trump meets Vladimir Putin in August in Anchorage to discuss resolving the Ukraine conflict. And something happened in August this year. August 2025 was crazy. The schism between Candace Tucker and Nick, something happened, because in August, that is when Candace, or maybe it was in July, but it's around those months where Candace invites Nick Fuentes, does a kind of critical interview, racism, all sorts of stuff. And then that's where Candace talks to Tucker, and Tucker calls Nick Fuentes a gay guy living in his basement. Something happened. And then Vladimir Putin meets Donald Trump. They talk about resolving the Ukraine conflict. And this is where I was like, something's a brewing. Trouble's a brewing. That is when I stated in August, we're about to face the four most eventful months ever. Something big is about to happen, because everything is at a standstill. Ukraine, Russia is fudging into the sludge of paralytic advancement. Same thing for Israel, Gaza. It's kind of, okay, it's a peace, but it's a genocide that was effectively completed before the peace happened. And the Iran stuff, all of this, and then I started seeing signs like these attacks on Nick Fuentes, this elevation of Nick Fuentes. I didn't see it coming, where they would go. They would bring him to the forefront. They would go in a frontal attack because they felt they couldn't afford to ignore him while staying relevant anymore. So all of this led me to believe something big has to happen. If something big doesn't happen, someone will cause something big to happen, because. And this is where we got the assassination of Charlie Kirk. I consider that my prediction that something big had to happen, based on the fact that there was too many things at the standstill. There was too much money kind of wanting to make its way into a direction for the world, either war and profiteering from war or other directions. And I was like, some people are going to take extreme measures to make things happen. And we got the Charlie Kirk assassination in September. On September 10th, at the campus event in Utah. Charlie Kirk assassinated. All of this before the assassination, there was a build-up. Candace Owens, Tucker Carlson against Nick Fuentes. Some part of the right had decided, we're not going to ignore this guy anymore. We're going to go after him. And it started with Tucker and Candace, and arguably Charlie Kirk could have been the third in the queue. Although there is no sign for it. And I'm not saying that before his death, he wanted to speak to Nick Fuentes. I think that up to the last moment, his position was still, we need to socially exclude Nick Fuentes. But he was definitely in the circle, being a super friend with Candace, super friend with Tucker. He was definitely a subject to temptation in the future, where if this was a kind of dam that they couldn't contain, this whole, we want to talk to Nick Fuentes, we're going to do it. He would have been probably in the queue to do it at some point in his life. And on top of it, he had so much money on his shoulder, so much things waiting on him. The pressure on Charlie Kirk was enormous. I had never really realized before he died. But it's millions of dollars. It's employees whose lives depend on him. It's a parasitic class around TPUSA. We see them now. We see them more now. But when Charlie Kirk was taking the star, was taking the spotlight, we were seeing them less. And it hadn't struck me that, okay, there's all these people that are all in line to get a little bit of that money flow from the top. They're the people who are the yes men of Charlie Kirk. And some of them may be secretly hating Charlie Kirk, but they're the guys that you see at TPUSA these days that are now hosting his show instead of him. So much pressure on a man can kill you. It can. The thing is, the more you are important in the eyes of others, the more there are consequential things stemming from your life, the more there are consequential things. My audio is... Oh, that must be some... By the way, I've ordered a new digital... Hello? 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 Yeah! Okay! By the way, I've ordered a new digital acquisition system. It's coming in the mail. I hope it will come in early January, because I think that this one is reacting to temperature or something. I think that this one is just skipping because there's a temperature change, or maybe my lights are drawing less or more electricity at some point, and this thing is just poof. It's losing like 20 dB. So I've ordered a high quality replacement because I think that my whole system is very high quality. My old audio system is very high. Hello? Yeah. Okay. Okay. My whole system is very high audio quality, but I have this is kind of an old X1222 that I've been using since a long time. I remember having it around the days of Mama JF in 2017. So it's been 8 years. I think there's an electrical thing in it that just gives up at times. all right. Let's continue our review. Thank you very much for the super chat. USPP4YM says, JF, you fell out with Greg Johnson of Countercurrents over COVID. I like Greg, but I'm increasingly distancing myself from him on key issues. for instance, Ukraine, COVID, Nick, etc. Your thoughts on him? Well, yeah, I mean, he's been having this bizarre behavior at the last debate. Like, I'm a guy who debates hard, but it's like it's a game to me. You're still a friend to me, even if I try to destroy you in a debate. To me, it's all a game, and then we are part of a community then, and we love each other. So that's how I was approaching my debate with him, but he was on my channel, and at the end of the debate, I felt that he had lost the debate and that he was frustrated. And of course, I'm sure he felt like he had won it, but he was kind of frustrated at the intensity of the debate, and he used the F word on my show. Like, and it's like, first you're gay. Like, if I understand things correctly. So now it's like I have a man who is speaking for the continuation of white people, who's not continuing any white people anytime soon. And on top of it, he's using the slurs against his own community to get my channel in trouble because he's pissed that I went rough against him on a debate regarding COVID. So that was like, okay, so now I have a gay man on my show just being annoying and trying to crash my show by using the slur against gay men. I was finding this extremely disrespectful, and in the end, you do have to ask the question, what is the point? What is the point of having someone who's not producing white people talk about the continuation of white people? And I'm not saying that they necessarily don't have something interesting to say, but like that remains to be demonstrated. In the end, like, I don't feel that there's any interest to me. And I think that there may be people who like this content. I don't think there's much interest in white, positive, white nationalist content. Like, I do believe it's important to have white positive views as part of your political commentary. But in and of itself, I don't need a book to tell me that white people should do this or that. See, that's where none of these white nationalists are very satisfying to me intellectually. And I know that people say that I'm a white nationalist. I've never really endorsed this label other than through jokes, and I don't even want to deny this label. It's not that I'm not this, but it's like, does that deserve books? Do we need infinite number of strategists who produce videos and books saying, that's what we should do. If everyone does this, it's gonna work. I don't know. I am for a cultural change, and I am for these talking points to make it into our cultural domain. And I think they've been extremely successful. But I don't need, I'm not a consumer of white nationalist literature. People often say, Jeff, what book should I read to understand white nationalism? I have no clue. Because I've never read a single book about it. Because that's not something I would read a book on. Because it's so obvious. These things are so obvious that it's kind of ridiculous to have to lay them out in a long book. That's why I wouldn't write a book about it also. It's because like white people food is something. Like, if we're talking about food, let's do food correctly. I'm fascinated by doing things correctly. But the abstract idea of white nationalism, I don't need someone else to tell me what to think about it. And it's most of it is very, very basic logic. And you're either going to have it or you're going to have the shells of cognitive protection and cognitive dissonance so that these ideas can never penetrate in your brain. But I don't like moralist writings, moralist literature, moralist on anything, even the morals I agree with. I don't want to read about it because it's there's no insight in this domain. It's you have a couple of axioms and you go by them. Whereas with science, you have insight. With science, DNA, the discovery of DNA, genes, and any sort of information or experiment, it comes to feed your worldview with facts. But no one needs a book to tell them that, yeah, you know, there's an attack against white people in our society, and you better start protecting. You better start taking over institutions or fleeing in a way as to protect yourself from these attacks. Marby Dog says, JF, your rhetoric is important for the future of WN. Always honest, always in service to truth. There is no meaningful white nationalist scholarship. Kevin McDonald is a scientist. Exactly, that's how I see it. I'm much more interested in a Kevin McDonald. Because here you think you have a worldview that is explanatory, that feeds new facts in my brain, and that gives me insight. But you don't get insight from strategic planning. And there is no such thing as insight on morality unless you're a feeble mind with unclear concepts. If you are, like me, a strong mind with his own behavioral code and conceptions, you don't really need a guide in the domain of morality or even tactical strategic concerns. That's all I had to say about this. Now, am I hateful of Greg? No. I don't keep a beef in my heart against what he did. But it was ridiculous. And now I saw his old appearance on Millionaire Wars because he was appearing in the same day as me. And I like to watch the previous shows as mine. And I find what he had to say quite intelligent. But it's still political strategizing. I'm a man of science. I'm a man of facts. I need a little more than this to be a consumer of content. Now, not that I disagreed with much of what he had to say. So September, yeah, the Charlie Kirk assassination completely changed our world. And it led the schism that already started to crack. It totally cracked. And in a way, you know how these extremists, sometimes they engage in these shootings for the purpose of a form of accelerationist of the enemy. To put the other side in on a defensive position and becoming more aggressive. You could say that Tyler Robinson has totally succeeded. In a way, I'm sure it's on his mind if he sees the world these days, if he's still in contact with the world by the internet and TV. I'm sure it's on his mind how his assassination of Charlie Kirk has caused a rift that Charlie Kirk was kind of holding things together and now it's not being held anymore. And it arguably it has led to a form of radicalization, to a form of penetration by people who were usually, and I'm not saying that we should socially exclude them, like the Nick Fuentes of this world, but they were pushed to the side and now their talking point and even my talking points are now becoming increasingly mainstream. It's amazing the speed at which it's going. I didn't expect this. Sadie Edwards says, do you ever talk to Anika Skywalker after Coach destroyed her on your New Year's show years ago? No, I haven't spoken to her since, but I'm not close to her. I remember there was this bizarre interaction because CRP was trying to attack her on my show. But she was sending me DMs saying, no, it's all bullshit. And I was like, okay, I don't have a strong position. I mean, this was one of these petty moments of CRP. You know how petty this guy is? It's a sorry for the sounds. I have to neutralize this. CRP, you know, I love this guy. I love this guy. Maybe like just a few men on planet Earth I loved as much as CRP. Because I have great respect for great scientists and thinkers. But CRP, I just loved him. Gonzalo Lira, I just loved him. But this guy was such a social man. It was amazing. Every time I would speak to him, he would be like, this guy said this about this, and I think this guy is saying that, and I think it's related to this guy. And I was like, the artist JF was just standing in admiration of the social brain when I was talking to TRP. And he was going on these petty attacks and fights against everyone, Sargon, Anika Skywalker, all of this for what? USPP4 says, but JF, in my opinion, you're wrong about music. AI music is okay, but you cannot replace human music with this. We need human brains navigating this. The future will tell whether you're right. I think that already we are at a performance and quality level that is pretty much equal. And the ease of production is very much more easy for AI. So I believe it's just a matter of time before people accept AI. Now, this may never happen. I think the only obstacle to AI music is the fact that ultimately music is a social phenomenon and it's not what we think. The music isn't what music is about. King and queen crowning is at the heart of the music industry. It's this whole behavior by the people. They want to elevate a queen. They do this in high schools. It's a natural monkey phenomenon. You want to elevate a queen. I don't know exactly what are all the... I've not thought through what are all the evolutionary forces at play. Like, why do people at the bottom want to elevate a queen and a king for the high school? But that's what music is about very much. It's about, oh my God, we're going to make it. We're going to act like this guy is the guy. We're going to act like Mick Jagger. Every woman should want to fuck him. And it's like, it's kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy / delusion. It's like, okay, well, at base, if you were to take Mick Jagger before his stardom and you take just a random other guy, there probably wasn't much difference. But somehow there's a self-reinforcing cycle and he gets a little bit of celebrity and now everyone wants him to be more celebrous and it's kind of, it goes infinite. Now, the problem of AI music is that AI music only does the product. It only does the part of the music that doesn't matter. What matters is actually the king and queen crowning mechanism. And as long as AI isn't able to incarnate someone that you would want to crown, AI will fail against weaker and lower quality human performers. I would agree. USPP4 says, Jeff, explain how this is not TRP applied to music. Well, if you want to make it as a metaphor, it's TRP applied to music. But it's not TRP because music is not a replicator. That's why. That's the only difference. It's music isn't a replicator, therefore it cannot have a phenotypic revolution. So then we have November, the G20 summit is hosted by South Africa with U.S. participation. And December, well, what do we see? What do we have in the current situation? There is extreme pressure on the Republican Party. There is the Ben Shapiro's of this world. They want to take over the right, and they want to censor and tabooize certain ideas. And then there is a bunch of other people who are saying, let these ideas flow in the right as people may or may not adhere to them, but let's not make it a taboo that kicks you out of the right. And ultimately what we have is a fight between the Jewish centrist part of the Republican Party that are only in the party, really, because it was probably in their interest for Israel. They started feeling that the Democrats were disconnected from Israeli concerns. And so they started feeling that their only possible home in U.S. politics was through the right, through Trump. Not even the whole of the right, but the very specific either neocon or Trump-style Israeli kneeler. And so that's one side of the tension. The other side of the tension is people who want true America first. It's Nick Fuentes. It's people who are tired of supporting other countries with our lives and our money. And this side, these two sides are fighting. And I don't know who will win. I think it might be preferable that we don't win this one in a way. Because the problem is if we win and if Nick Fuentes is kind of given a semblance of a place in the Republican Party, then he may back J.D. Vance. He may accept to strategically abandon a lot of his claims to be part of the club. You know, that's one of my fears going into 2026. We already see that Nick has talked a lot about war and how he's not against war that much. And we see Alex Jones attacking Candace Owens. I see that the line Nick Fuentes, Alex Jones is developing into a kind of ascending line that seems that it will be accepted in the mainstream of the Republican Party, but at the cost of, first, all of the weaknesses that Nick carries with him, which is that he is mostly an edgy thinker, but he is an authoritarian. We saw his failures in the COVID stuff, and his failures would show in a war against Venezuela, probably. And probably he could be tempted to support a war against Venezuela. So all of this to say, there is currently massive transactions happening on the right in terms of what will be the right in 2026, what will be the candidate in 2028, and who will be on his side. Personally, I feel very disconnected from the political system. So I don't have anything to give to that question. I would support at any point in time. I will just support what I feel is in our interest and what I feel is, and I will combat what I feel is against our interest. But we are in a bizarre moment of comfort on the right, thinking we have won, thinking Trump is fighting illegal immigration, so it's fine, thinking, well, we have passed trans-speak and LGBT ideology, we're now fighting back. This is all good in terms of the direction we're taking. But I don't think we have such solid victories, and I think our political system is still being subverted. It's being subverted on our own side at this point. And I would probably prefer that we go the hard way in the coming years and that we induce Republican losses, because I'm not satisfied that the message has passed. I'm not satisfied that the people who are now smart, you know how bizarre it is? Did you notice how bizarre it is? Am I the only one who felt this? How the world suddenly changed away from cancel culture? When all these people that are now trying to drain street creds from having Nick Fuentes on, from having this person on or that person on, or from engaging with edgy statements. All of these people, less than a year ago, were still within the full frame of cancel culture. We're still never speaking about any of us. We were still being treated like less than human. What's happening is very bizarre. Very unsettling. And I would say another personality that I haven't commented on, this will be my last comment on 2025, Candace Owens has been stealing the show. She's been stealing the show with her YouTube voice, launching a lot of questions. And she's launching the questions on her show, but it develops onto the internet by other people. You know, to her credit, you have to grant that it's mostly other people who are extrapolating her stuff into conspiracy theories. But I believe she has mastered a new art of making the process of fact-finding public. And I think it's all very satisfying. Even if I think she's doing it wrong at times and the ethics of it aren't superb and the risks of errors and misguidance and false directions are enormous. But in the end, I believe that we must have a public truth-finding process. And that must include the public study of hypotheses about things we're not sure of. Because as long as we don't have this, we don't have transparency, we have institutions deciding in the background what they will tell us, and it's always going to be lies, and it's always going to be against our interest. And we'll never be able to have the conviction that a true process of fact-finding has been performed. The advantage of Candace's approach in 2025. Maybe she won't find the truth. Maybe there's no conspiracy. Maybe there isn't anything else to know about the murder of Charlie Kirk. But she went on a quest that has set a new standard in streaming, which is that at least we're going to know that someone tried hard. And so, to all the people criticizing Candace, I'm with you. This is at times violating the standards that we usually live by in journalism. And not even in classical journalism, but even in just basic live streaming ethics, which is a very small book. It's a very small book, the book that defines the ethics of a live streamer. But yeah, she's going beyond it, and she's going kind of wild and paranoid at times in her exploration. But see the good in this. I see the good in this. I can say, although all of my critiques against her, I can say there is good in this. The good is that we're going to be convinced at the end of it that a wild, savage dog has been unleashed toward the truth. And it's running faster than the truth. It's running circles around it sometimes. Circles of falsehood. And that is reassuring. That is reassuring that there is now a public process. Maybe one day I'll take on a massive quest of myself, you know? Something that no one wants to investigate, but I'll go autist about it. That's what Candace has decided to do with the assassination of Charlie Kirk. And that's reassuring that this exists now. That is my comment on 2025. Thank you very much all for the support, the generous super chats. I might take a break tomorrow and I'll be on and off. One day off for vacation, one day on. So I might be seeing you all on the 27th in 2 days from now. People are still talking about AI, art. I enjoy AI. I enjoy my interactions with Grok. By the way, when I did these culinary experiments, I totally used Grok to guide me in having logistics. Because let me tell you, developing 5 new flavors of Xiaolongbao with 4 different vinegary sauce, you need logistics. And I was like, please make a schedule for my whole day. How do I get this done? How do I get the Welsh rarebit jelly done? What would be your starting ingredients? And Grok totally guided me. So Grok can be used in the process of human creation. Nicholas Petris says, I mostly agree PP4YM, but I don't think JF can interface with your argument currently while you send a bunch of chats and he's talking about something else. What was he saying? That's okay, but you're just assuming something exists to be copied in the first place. Oh yeah, you're still stuck on the fact that that I said that music isn't a replicator. USPP4YM, but humans always have the creativity. Jeff, please explain how AI can replace human art and why this is good. Oh well, how do I explain this? I want to give you a satisfactory answer. So there were bubble gums in the 90s. And you would go around a place where every youth was, and it would be covered in bubble gum. I mean, you would go to a public trash, and instead of being thrown in the trash, people would stick their bubble gum all around the trash, forming kind of a wall. And you needed actual employees to unstick the bubble gum of everyone back then. And from the perspective of these janitors, whose job it was to unstick the bubble gum, this was wonderful. I mean, some people made a living. Can you imagine you're a janitor, your job is to collect the bubble gums that are sticked everywhere. And you make a living, there's a woman that loves you because of it, because you're bringing back money on the table and you're having babies. Now, for the janitor, it's a bad news that bubblegum use has been reduced now. I don't know, do the youth in 2025 even know about bubblegum? Because I can tell you that I see much less bubblegums and I see people chewing much less. These days. So from the perspective of the janitor, it sucks. But, you know, we have the assumption in society that if something has disappeared such that all human needs are still satisfied, the disappearance of the bubble gum didn't hurt anyone, any of the gum chewers. It hurt the janitors whose job relied on this, but it is generally, it should be assumed that society now is better, that a bubblegum-less society is better because we have one less janitor to pay and we're more efficient. We address all of the same needs of even more people, of a bigger population, but there's less bubblegums to unstick from the trash. I claim that much of artistry is like the bubblegums. It's something we should get rid of. We're paying people that shouldn't be paid. And if an AI can produce a material of equal value by all standards, by standards that you can't even recognize who's AI and who's human, then it should. Because if you can indulge society without the janitor, if you can have it, so If you can have an equally clean space without hiring the janitor, then that's a move forward in productivity. And if you can create music without the human beings and without the whole social circles that developed around pop music, which is absolutely disgusting, degeneracy, corruption, you know, radio deals with various industry agents that are signing tough contracts with the stars, computer modification of voice, false singing, auto-tune. People aren't even singers anymore. So it's like, if you can get rid of all this unproductive janitor stuff and still deliver music to the people that they like just as much, that should be considered an advance. USPP4YM says, these come from areas, from people, from situations. So AI cannot write a song in grunge style, in emo style, or whatever. Oh, it can in principle. It may not be able to your satisfaction now, but having seen what it can do, it's really not far. It's coming.